pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. May be seated. First case on our calendar is 07-728, Henry Justin Andrew. Ms. Miller.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Mr. Cummings, may it please the court. I am Elizabeth Miller, and I represent the appellant in this matter. The overarching issue before this court is what rights and process are afforded to an 18-year-old appearing in juvenile court answering to a complaint alleging him to be a delinquent child. Are they the same rights and protections afforded to a 17-year-old appearing in juvenile court answering to the same or a similar delinquency complaint, or is that 18-year-old afforded something different? Our position, after a thorough reading of the juvenile rules and the express language provided by our General Assembly, is that that 18-year-old and that 17-year-old are afforded the same rights when they're in juvenile court answering to a juvenile delinquency complaint. More specifically, at issue in this case is whether an 18-year-old who is under the continuing jurisdiction of the juvenile court is deemed a child for purposes of the juvenile court proceedings. Again, our answer is yes. A person who has attained the age of 18 while under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court is a child pursuant to the legal definition provided by the General Assembly. Therefore, he is entitled to all of the rights and protections of the Juvenile Code, including but not limited to the statutory right to counsel provided in Revised Code 2151-352. Revised Code 2151-352 specifically provides that counsel must be provided for a child not represented by the child's parent, guardian, or custodian at all stages of the proceedings. While it is true that the ordinary and common definition of the word child does not include a person who has attained the age of 18, our General Assembly has determined that an 18-year-old under the exclusive jurisdiction of the juvenile court is a child for juvenile court proceedings. Revised Code 2152-06C is...
Counsel, you would say that distinction is valid because he offended when he was a juvenile and was already then under the auspices of the juvenile court. That has to be your pivotal distinction here, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because we all know at 18, had he offended, he would be in the adult court without any juvenile court involvement.
Yes, if he's under the continuing jurisdiction of the court and a delinquency complaint is filed in juvenile court, then once he appears in juvenile court, he's entitled to all the rights and protections in that court. If, as Your Honor just stated, he turned 18 and a criminal complaint was filed against him and he appeared in adult court, then the criminal code and protections would apply to him in that proceeding. Revised Code 2152-06C is instructive on this issue. While it generally states that a child is a person under the age of 18, it provides two specific and explicit exceptions to that provision. C2 states that any person who violates the law prior to attaining the age of 18 shall be deemed a child irrespective of that person's age at the time the complaint is filed or the hearing on the complaint is held. More instructive here is 2152-06C6, which states, the juvenile court has jurisdiction over a person who is adjudicated a delinquent prior to turning 18 years of age until the person turns 21, and for purposes of that jurisdiction related to that adjudication, a person who is so adjudicated a delinquent child shall be deemed a child until the person attains the age of 21.
Ms. Miller, if I could just make sure we're talking about the same section. Are you mentioning 2151.011, the definitional section? You're citing to 06?
No, Your Honor. I'm specifically reciting 2152-02C, which is actually very similar to 2151-001, the definitional section of the juvenile code. They're very similar, except for 2151-011 defines a child and provides the provision for unruly children. But when you turn to 2152, that code section generally applies to delinquent children. Moreover, even if this court were to disagree with our position and adopt the position of the First District, which found that a person who attains the age of 18 is not considered a child for purposes of juvenile court jurisdiction. This case should still be reversed and remanded because it's undeniable that Justin was a party to the proceeding and therefore was entitled to counsel under Juvenile Rule 2 and Juvenile Rule 4. When the state invoked the juvenile court's continuing jurisdiction by alleging that Justin violated his parole, Justin became a party to the proceeding. Notwithstanding his age at the time of the proceeding, Justin's rights to counsel arose when he became a party to the juvenile court's proceeding. Accordingly, I urge this court to give meaning to the express intent of our General Assembly to keep children who have been adjudicated delinquent within the jurisdiction of the juvenile court, unless or until that juvenile court terminates that jurisdiction or until the child reaches the age of 21.
Counsel, what about the issue of waiver? Is that implicated here?
I believe we can't even get to the issue of waiver to determine what standard is the proper standard review until we determine that he's a child and revised code 21.
Well, you said, assuming arguendo, that we would find that he is not a child, you then referenced the right to counsel.
Okay.
As a party. So proceed with that, would you?
Yes. If this court determines that he is not a child and he's a part of the proceeding, then this court's recent decision of In Re CS would be instructive on the issue on what type of waiver the court needed to obtain in order for it to be knowing, intelligent, and voluntary. I don't believe that even under the facts of this case that there was a valid waiver, not only because Justin appeared in court without parent, counsel, guardian, or an attorney, which is the first step that we need to overcome.
But if we find that he is not a child for these purposes, there is no statutory right to have a parent present when an adult, 18-year-old, waives their right to counsel.
If I may, are you saying even if he's a party, then the juvenile rules in the juvenile code and this court's opinion in Re CS would apply? So I would argue that you still have to go back to 2151.352, which says he must have be afforded counsel if he's not accompanied and advised by his parent or guardian. So unless this court were to find he's not a child and he's not a party, and therefore he should have been, I don't know, he couldn't have been charged in criminal court for leaving his placement, but if that were the crime, it were a crime, then it would be a different sort of waiver provision altogether. In the absence of any further questions, I'd just like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Phil Cummings. I represent the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office in the state of Ohio in this matter. Your Honors, it's the state's position that for three reasons, the term child should not be interpreted as appellant would have this court do. First of all, the statutory language, we believe, is deliberate and clear. Secondly, there's a time-honored tradition that the age of majority does have legal significance. And third, there are modern realities and practicalities that this court must recognize when dealing with juvenile issues. First of all, I want to discuss the statutory language. The General Assembly was very specific in using the word child. It said in 2151.352, counsel must be provided for a child, not represented by the child's parent. The General Assembly did not say counsel must be provided to any person in juvenile court, or to any offender in juvenile court, or to any party in juvenile court. The General Assembly specifically used the word child, and that child has a defined meaning in the code. It means someone under 18. Now, granted, that definitional section does go on to say that the court has jurisdiction beyond age 18, but that is not the issue before this court. Nobody's contesting that the juvenile court has continuing jurisdiction of somebody when they're 18, 19, 20, or 21. What the state's contention is that designation is for purposes of the adjudication. It's for the jurisdictional purposes of juvenile court, i.e. placement options, sentencing options, social service accessibility, rehabilitative services. It's for the purposes of juvenile court that the juvenile court maintains auspices of those up to age 21.
If we accept your proposition that he does not qualify as a child because he's turned 18, how is this an adequate hearing? I mean, if this hearing had happened in adult court, first of all, is the We have several excerpts from the transcript in our briefs.
Yes.
That seemed to be the entire hearing on his waiver of counsel, correct?
Correct.
So how is that present itself as an adequate waiver hearing when about the only colloquy is, can my girlfriend represent me? No. Do you understand you're waiving your right to counsel? Yes. There's no explanation of the charges. There's no explanation of what happens if he's, you know, goes to a judge and not a jury. None of that happens. So how is that an adequate waiver, even if he were to be treated as an adult?
Well, it was adequate in that it's clear from a reading of the record, although it is not as complete as some. It is reflective in the record that he was aware of the charges against him, and it's clear from the record that he understood he had a right to counsel.
And how is it clear? Did the judge explain those to him?
Yes, the judge went out of its the magistrate went out of his way to say two or three times, "Look, you do have a right to be represented. Do you understand that?" And he started mentioning something about his girlfriend being
right,
present.
But where in the record does the magistrate explain the charges?
I think the magistrate refers to the parole officer who explains the charge and reads them to the court.
Okay.
And I think that's
so
what's on the record.
You're saying that it doesn't have to be the magistrate or judge. It can be a third party that explains something, and that's adequate?
I think under a totality of circumstances analysis, and sometimes it can be, I think that's what the First District found, that given the whole totality of the circumstances of this hearing, it was clear that Mr. Andrew understood what he was charged with, understood he had a right to counsel, and knowingly waived it. I would also like to point out that the right to counsel, as this court has acknowledged, is a personal right. It flows from the Due Process Clause. And just as I believe the dissent said in In Re Se Es, authored by Justice Lanzinger, I believe that there's a correlative right to waive the right to counsel and dispense with a lawyer's help if a person wishes to do so. To embrace the appellant's position in this case would be actually to deny juvenile court offenders the same rights they would have in common pleas court, the right to waive counsel. And the General Assembly is clear, this court has been clear, that a juvenile does have the right to waive counsel. It's in Juvenile Rule 4. It's in the Ohio Revised Code. If we accept this reading of the interpretation of these statutes, what this court would be saying would be that an 18, 19, 20-year-old man or woman could not waive their right. And that would actually be denying this person a right that they would have across the street in common police court.
Counsel, is it really saying they don't have the right to waive, but that they can only waive in compliance with the standards set up in In Re CS?
Correct. That would be if they had the advice of a parent, but...
Or an attorney that was with them, and then they rejected the attorney's continued support or help there. As long as there's, or a guardian to explain to them, but that's what the crux of In Re CS is. It has to be a disinterested adult that is giving valid consideration to the options or the issues before the child.
Correct.
So
understood.
So if we find that this individual is a child, as the appellant is urging, you would agree that In Re CS would apply?
I agree that if this court interprets the word child to encompass any offender in juvenile court, that would be absolutely true. That is, I think, what this issue is all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's the state's position, though, that should not be the reading embraced by this court, because a person, an adult, somebody over the age of 18, somebody in the age of majority, has a right under the Due Process Clause to dispense with legal representation if they so choose.
So is it, in your view, a discrimination against this 18-year-old?
I think it's...
Because he finds himself under the continuing jurisdiction of juvenile court?
It's creating a third class of people that need not exist. And we have a system now where we have children and adults. To embrace the appellant's position would be to create a third class of man-boys or girl-women, in a sense, 19, 20-year-olds, these hybrid-type class of people that really don't have the right to waive counsel in juvenile court. And I think that is not a message that we want to send to offenders in juvenile court. Juvenile court wants to encourage offenders to be accountable, to take responsibility for their decisions. In fact, in N. Ray C.S., this court went out of its way to note that just the act itself of making a choice about waiver of counsel can be a big step towards the rehabilitation of an offender, somebody that can understand the consequences of his or her behavior, accept responsibility, and decide they're going to take control of their life and move forward. I think to deny an adult man or woman the ability to waive counsel sends the wrong message. And pragmatically, I think it's important to realize that in juvenile court, the courts are not going to be able to find the parents of 19 or 20-year-olds in many cases. Oftentimes, the juvenile court can't find the parents of 9 or 10-year-olds.
Well, when that happens, you keep saying you're denying them the right. You're not denying them the right. You just have to follow different procedures than in an adult court to assert the right to waive counsel. And if you can't find a parent, then you just appoint standby counsel who they can consult with and choose not to use. I mean, there's procedures that will apply. There's no need to create a third class that I can see. It's just that you continue to apply the juvenile procedures as long as they're in juvenile jurisdiction. So I don't get where you say they have denied the right to waive counsel. They just have to follow a different procedure than an adult court. Isn't that correct? I mean, you already conceded in re CJ would apply if they were still a child under our definition.
Yeah, I believe that if this court reads the juvenile code to mean that a child is a child for everything that occurs in juvenile court, yes, a CS would apply. It's the state's position that the General Assembly specifically used the word child for a reason. It could have used the word person or any party or any offender in juvenile court must be appointed an attorney. It didn't say that. It specifically said any child. And then it defines child in the definitional section as anyone under 18. So I think the deliberate use of the word child has legal significance, and I think it was meant to have a meaning, because there is a well-established and well-recognized meaning in our society, in our jurisprudence, that those 18 and above are deemed competent for constitutional waiver of counsel purposes.
So counsel, theoretically, under the appellant's position here, you could have an 18 come into court under the continuing jurisdiction. That individual could be married, could be a parent, could have entered into contracts, and they would be able to do all those things, but yet still be under the classification as a child. Am I understanding that correct?
Exactly. And that's the state's whole position. You'd be actually discouraging the accountability that the offender would feel in juvenile court, and you'd be reducing the offender's own sense of involvement in the proceedings. I think, as it was mentioned in Ray Sayas, an 18 or 20-year-old man or woman would be reduced to a spectator, and they would be watching while the court, against the wishes of the offender, forces an attorney to stand next to this offender when the attorney or the offender may not want one. And it's the state's position that the juvenile court is designed to protect the rights of juveniles, not to reduce their rights, and to have a rule whereby you foist counsel on an adult who doesn't wish one, you are infringing upon their right to dispense with legal representation and self-representation if they want to do that. That's really the state's position in a nutshell, Your Honors. Unless this court has any further questions, I would submit it on the brief.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Cummings.
You, Your Honors.
Ms. Miller, you saved a little more than 7 minutes of your time. In fact, almost 8 minutes.
I'd first like to just state that I agree with the appellee's position that the General Assembly did provide a general definition of the word child to be someone who's under the age of 18. Appellee, however, leaves out the exceptions that are specifically provided that I had previously argued, stating that even if a child has attained the age of 18, he is still deemed a child for purposes of juvenile court jurisdiction if he was under the continuing jurisdiction of the court to begin with. To answer Justice O'Connor's question regarding a child coming into court, perhaps being married with a parent, does that mean that they're going to have to can they waive their right to counsel, or is there going to be more problems with that? The code actually states that not only is the child entitled to counsel in juvenile court proceedings, but so would the spouse, so would the parent. Anybody who becomes a party to that proceeding is entitled to counsel under 2151.352. And the reason for that is our General Assembly has determined that children are different. We treat them in the law as if they can't grow up until they turn 21 years of age. And that has been supported, obviously, by the Roper decision by the United States Supreme Court, which shows that the brain research that's come out and conducted shows that children don't fully develop or become mature adults until well into their 20s. So it's our position that it's clear that the legislature's express intent is to keep a person who has become involved with the juvenile court system under its jurisdiction until that person has reached the age of 21, thereby entitling that child to the protections of provided in the juvenile rules and juvenile code, including the right to counsel statutorily provided in revised code 2151-352. Because the first district's holding is contrary to the Constitution and to the express intent of our legislature, we urge this court to adopt the first proposition of law and reverse and remand the first district court of appeals for a determination consistent with this finding.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.